Welcome to Psych Tech, the Psychology and Technology Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Josue Cardona, with Kelly Dunlap. What is up, Kelly?
Oh, hey. How's it going?
Today, we are talking art or drawing or how to draw things.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty excited about it.
I am too. I feel like I have lots of feels, so I can't wait to get into it.
So one of the things that has come up very recently that I was pretty excited to see was something called Sketch RNN by Google. And the RNN stands for Recurrent Neural Network. And essentially what it is an AI that has been programmed to learn from people's sketching. So it used an app, a mobile app, where people would draw things, right? So they would be prompted with a word. So if someone said cat or pig, someone would draw a cat or a pig. And thousands and thousands and thousands of submissions were made. And the AI is learning from this. And then what it does is if you draw something, right, like a cat, it learns what a cat should look like. And then it makes its own version of a drawing of a cat based on. And it could go either way. They're still in an experimental phase. So they seem like they're trying out different things. But it seems like if you tell it to draw a cat, it'll draw its own conclusion of what a cat should look like. But if you draw a cat, it can actually draw another cat kind of based on its own information because it understands, oh, it looks like you're trying to draw a cat. Here's how I would draw a cat. And there's all these possibilities for what you could do with something like that. But I just thought that that was really cool.
As somebody who's artistically challenged, I find it incredibly exciting.
So the fact that you're artistically challenged, these are not professional drawings. These are not clip arts. These are they're like doodles. They're like what you would have in a notebook, you know, something you would draw during a meeting.
It's still way better than anything I could draw.
Maybe.
I mean, I totally own up to that. I'm comfortable with that.
So what did you think when you saw that? Like, are there any ideas that you have about how we could use something like that or how that could either affect the way we do sketches or drawings in the future?
I see it as being a really valuable tool if you're trying to learn how to draw, because then it can make suggestions based on, you know, anything from your handedness to the amount of pressure you normally use, or, you know, it can kind of guide you along the way. So I thought that was pretty cool. I also had a momentary flinch as I considered the hoity-toity philosophical debates about what is art and can something be created by a computer and have it be considered art, or is art a uniquely human endeavor? And yeah, that happened too.
So you had an existential crisis when you read this article?
No, I was cringing at the existential crisis that other people were going to have because I don't care enough.
Oh, gotcha.
I knew that it was coming, but I was like, I'm just going to walk away.
I think it's so good. I mean, I've taken drawing classes. My girlfriend is an artist. She's a designer. When she starts, like, her sketch notebook is intimidating to me. And, you know, so when she has an idea, she can sketch it out. But one thing that she can't do is sketch out 1,000 different variations of one idea very, mm-hmm. very quickly, which is one of the more exciting parts of the Sketch RNN, which is you can say, listen, I have an idea for a table. It has four sides and four legs, but it has, I don't know, like rounded corners. I don't know. And it's blue. And all of a sudden you can get 8,000 different, again, these are sketches because it's being drawn and not created, you know, it's not, mm-hmm. it's not just pulling from different pieces. It's learned how to do that. But because just like we would sketch something, it would, you know, look different every single time. This could have just so many variations that you can all of a sudden look at. And that's what's really exciting to me about this. It's one of those ideas. It seems like a superpower. It's like I can sketch one or two things out and maybe my creativity is shot at that point. Right. But even someone who is very, very creative and could have 1,000 different ideas, there's no way to put them down on paper as fast as you can think them. Mm-hmm. and then you have a lot to choose from. So that's really exciting to me. But unfortunately, we can't play with that yet because it's not here. It doesn't exist. The only other thing that I thought about it a lot. The only other thing that I thought of was if it can really recognize what something looks like. I thought of working in the mental health space, or if I were psychological testing, anything like that. You're working with small children, and maybe they're trying to draw something, right? Or people who really, you know, aren't good at drawing, like you.
Okay.
And you try to draw something, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, it looks, you know. Maybe I don't know what you're trying to draw, and I don't know what it resembles, but the AI could.
Yeah, well, again, if you're as bad as an artistic person as I am, I don't think there's anything that can help you.
I have faith in this. It's like, what did she try to draw? I don't know. I don't know. But again, so we can't play with that right now, but we do have something similar. Oh, this was created by Google, by the way. And then Google has something else that we can play with that's also kind of cool.
Yeah, auto draw. And this is where I'm drawing my empirical evidence on the fact that AI learning just can't master my artistic style. And if Skynet happens, people can communicate through me and my art because AI can't figure it out. So I was in Google Draw before this show, and I was like, you know, I'm going to draw Josue. And so now keep in mind, I'm doing this on the trackpad on my laptop, although to be honest, with a pen and paper, it probably wouldn't look much better anyway. And so I drew Josue's face, and then it was like, did you mean this? And then it gave me a list. I don't know if I want to ruin the surprise. I kind of want to tweet it out.
Oh,
but
okay.
I can tell you it was not human. It was not human at all. Oops.
Was yours much better? Or?
So then I drew my face, and it was human-esque. I got a human-esque type of response, although not really close at all to what I was going for. And then just to test it to see, okay, you know, I just want to test. I drew a unicorn, which actually kind of sort of looks like a unicorn. You can distinctly tell there are equine features, and it did recommend a horse. So I feel vindicated that maybe I'm just not a human artist. Maybe I should focus more on the mystical creatures, and I might be okay.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, I mean, again, so what if your drawing just really doesn't look like a person? Like your horses maybe look like horses, but your people just don't look like people. Is that really auto draw? Is it you?
Oh, I'm saying it's me. Because I'm sure other people. Because I was expecting to get like a smiley face or something, you know, like just your standard like emoticon smiley face.
Yeah.
I didn't even get that. I guess I'll share it and then I can tweet out the picture so you can see. But yeah, Josue, you were an owl.
Oh, hey, that's still like.
Like a full owl.
Yeah.
Head, feathers, talons, all that fun stuff.
Okay.
And then I was a human silhouette, apparently in the downward dog yoga position.
Did you draw your face or just
yes.
your face?
It was just my face.
and it represented an entire body in a yoga pose.
Yeah. I think it was the ponytail that confused it.
Okay.
But yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So this is funny because these are two sides of the same coin in a way. And so if you were trying to – if that information was going toward the sketch program, then it would learn how people draw my face and how people draw your face. And then it would learn – what that means, right? So if someone said draw Josue, it would look like whatever abomination you created, and it wouldn't look necessarily like my face, but it would look more like what you did. But now we're with auto draw, we're trying to compare essentially clip art, right, to people's drawings. So in the video on the website for auto draw, it says, you know, draw something that it's like make your best attempt at drawing the thing that you want, and we will give you art that resembles it. So it's interesting.
Like, yeah. Josue's face is an owl. Yeah. At least in my, maybe that's my projectiveness coming out, that when I think of Josue, I'm actually internalizing an image of some kind of owl.
Well, at least like an owl has a face. Yours is just, I need to see these drawings. I need to see the sketches.
I will share them. I will put them on Twitter. But yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And for the most part, I did try a bunch of different like creatures and shapes. And most of the time it was pretty close. So like I drew what was supposed to be a dog and it recommended a tiger. So that's not, that's not too far off. It's a mammal and it's got four legs and a face and things like that. And I drew a leaf and it got that it was a leaf. And I drew a happy face and it recommended a happy face. So it was, I feel like for... like broad strokes. It's kind of like in psychology when we talk about gross motor skills versus fine motor skills. I feel that AutoDraw is very good at gross motor. So like it can tell in broad strokes, like, are you making a biped? Are you making a quadruped? Are you making something that's not an animal at all? Versus if you're getting into something like human faces, which can be so different that it really has fine distinctions, and that's maybe where it struggles a little bit. But again, these are brand new. The AI is still learning, and they're just going to get better over time. But I do feel really cool about being some kind of like secret wind talker for post Skynet years, because my art is indecipherable.
Yeah, but then you'd have to teach other people how to interpret your art. You're essentially creating another language. I don't think you're helping the post-apocalyptic future.
You know, Josue, as a therapist, mm-hmm. I am all about reframing and looking at things from a strength-based perspective. Mm-hmm. And so rather than going, I am terrible at art, I'd like to conceptualize that after the apocalypse, I will be valuable. And that is a very positive place for my brain to be. I can't even finish it without.
Oh, the way we learn is through practice and by being able to do these things repeatedly. But there's also a creativity component, right? So the way that you draw a face is not the way that someone else might draw a face, and we know from seeing drawings and animation for years that there are many different ways to represent a human face. And one of the things that I'm most excited about is when we start letting the AI do its own thing so that it starts having its own style, so that it's not – right now it's learning from human sketches, but we're going to have AIs that develop their own artistic style. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you define creativity in something like that, right? Like is the computer being – random, or is it being creative? Did it develop a style? Is there such a thing as a preference? Like, I don't know how that works. I don't know how we're going to talk about that in the future, but I'm very excited to see. It's like, oh, look, that is done in the style of Sketch 2.7. Mm-hmm. And he's the most revered of all the AI doodlers in the world. There's a new exhibit at the MoMA, I don't know, something like that. So it's a very interesting view of the future, and I feel like we're going to be able to play around with Sketch pretty soon. They, Google is great about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they don't dangle something too far out in the future.
Effectively, and there is a research paper that they did and explaining, going into depth about this, and I'll put that in the show notes. And it's, I don't know, but it is exciting.
And it's also really interesting because this is hand-drawn art. I'm really interested in pixel art because I'm actually working on a game right now just to like practice my Unity skills and try to keep that, because it's like a language and you lose it if you don't use it. But again, I am not an artist by any stretch. But I took a class in pixel art, and I can do things a pixel at a time. It's not the best, and you can have really amazing pixel art, and mine is not amazing pixel art, but you can tell that a human is a human and a sheep is a sheep or whatever.
You can't always tell that a brain is a brain.
Apparently not. Gross. Just gross is what that is.
That's what I saw. It didn't look like a brain to me.
I took a note. Mm-hmm. It's fine. mentally noted that. If you missed it on Twitter, in Photoshop and then posted to Twitter, I made a pixel art brain that was really happy. And Josue said it looked like a scrotum.
It does look like a scrotum.
Now I'm really upset.
Does it look like a scrotum to you?
No.
Can you unsee it?
No, never crossed my mind. It never crossed my mind. So. You see what you want to see, I guess.
I guess. Again, this whole thing about your art being the language of the future, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, that would be fun. Like, I'm trying to transmit to Josue that, you know, code word brain, and instead he thinks it's code word scrotum. That would really mess up our plans.
Yes. Yeah. Again, but going to your point earlier, you could be a great artist in the future.
Can we call this episode code name scrotum?
No.
Okay. I'm sorry. That's probably inappropriate.
No, I don't know.
But yeah, like, I mean, computers making digital art, and they already do so much of it. But yeah, it's all rules based, just like with drawing. And I do wonder, there's going to have to be some line between what is creativity and what is algorithm. You know, is the computer just taking the sum of the average? You know, like taking all these styles and finding what's the average arc, what's the average cat look like, and then synthesizing something based on that, which is very mathematical and algorithmic. Or in that case, they could probably draw a really good looking tiger. But what about other art forms like impressionist? Or, I mean, could a computer ever spontaneously come up with something like a Pollock? Or because it's limited to what humans know, is it possible to create something that humans don't know? Or have never seen?
Yeah, that was kind of my point before. Yeah, I'm assuming that we're gonna have new things to talk about in that arena, because there will be, if we keep trying to compare it, like you said, spontaneously create a Pollock. Like, well, but are they doing something that's Pollock like? Are they doing their own rendition of that? Are they imitating it? And was it just something that was completely random and it came out okay? Or was it – because the thing about AI is that it's based on – much like humans, it's based on what it knows, right? It's based on all these rules. But there's also a how much randomness is there in our behavior, in our creation, in our creativity?
Well, especially if you think about, you know, the kind of the trope of the tortured artist, and that so many of the most renowned creative thinkers, especially in like literature and like painting, had some kind of significant mental illness, you know, whether it was depression or mania or something like that. Can a computer have manic depression? Like, or is it still so formulaic that it can mimic what was created in these altered perceptual states?
That's a good point. What if we program manic and depressive states into it, right? And then just to see how that would affect its art, right? I mean, something we could do. Yeah.
We can do anything.
We can do anything.
I look forward to our new art overlords, digital art overlords.
Oh, what about art, like AI-assisted artists, the same way that we talk about, like, oh, the best chess players are the ones who can play with a computer. And now we see these chess matches where it's person and computer playing against each other, and now that's the next level. What if I am an AI-assisted artist?
I like to think that I am an AI-assisted artist, at least in a very limited way. So, for example, when I'm making pixel art in Photoshop, you know, I can have it snap to grid. So I'm not actually placing the pixel. I mean, I am kind of, but it's being placed in a specific location by something that's not me. There's some kind of algorithm running in the background that's deciding where it snaps to. So that might not rise to the level of AI, even a dumb AI, but it is computer-assisted art creation, and I'm sure it's not too far behind in terms of it becoming AI and Photoshop going, Kelly, you put this pixel here. Did you want it to be that color instead of this color?
Well, that's interesting because, you know, pixel art by definition, right? You're using, it would have to be in a grid, right? Because that way, that's what a pixel is, right? It would be like a part of a grid. And pixel art is really interesting because depending on how small, like depending on the resolution of the pixel, you get a very different look. Like think about, you know, old Nintendo games to Super Nintendo games to even, you know, 32-bit and 64-bit. Like when video games and computer software kept improving, it was like that. I mean, technically every single screen that you look at has pixels, but they're so small that you don't think that they're pixels. You don't see the pixels actually, but they are. And they have to be in a grid. Like otherwise there would be no way, like it's by definition, otherwise it would be painting with squares, maybe? You could put squares on top of squares and
all I know is that Photoshop helps me.
It does. I mean, because you can make pixel art on a like graph paper, for example.
Yeah. But I mean, speaking of pixel art, I feel like that's the perfect transition into the other piece of content that we wanted to talk about. And instead of, you know, focusing on computers learning how we draw, it was almost a kind of the reverse, how human beings kind of spontaneously generated a sketch one pixel at a time.
And this is like an entire cultural experience that happened over the course of a few days. And I want to read you something from Reddit.
Okay.
About it as an introduction. This is from Redditor underscore Eltonin underscore. And he says, "Place," which is what we're going to talk about now, "was an amazing cultural snapshot of the internet in 2017 that is the perfect example of what the word meme means in both its definitions." And he defines meme as the following: "An element of a culture or system of behavior passed from one individual to another by imitation or other non-genetic means." The other definition is: "An image, video, piece of text, etc., typically humorous in nature, that is copied and spread rapidly by internet users, often with slight variations." And he says, "What started off as a blank canvas with vague instructions and the ability to put down a single colored tile per user for every 5 minutes shortly but surely became a community-driven labor of love that spawned territorial control and aggression. Coordinated efforts to build, attack, defend, and rebuild. Debates over real estate allocation, diplomatic talks and alliances, faction-sanctioned protection, and other various activities that you'd least expect to come from a random social experiment whose main goal was simply to draw things on a canvas. This has seriously been one of the most interesting and fun things the internet has done as a collective, to which I am extremely glad to have experienced and have been a part of." What is he talking about?
Well, first, slow clap. Like, yeah. So it happened over April Fool's weekend, which I thought was an odd place to put it, but, you know, whatever. And so on Reddit, the Redditor creators created a subreddit called Our Place, which was this enormous canvas that was just blank and white, and that each person who wanted to on this subreddit could place a single pixel of their choosing. There was a limited color palette, but you could place a single pixel and that at a time. And that's what he was referring to. One pixel at a time, every 5 minutes was right.
It seemed to vary, but it's around 5 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. And it created this really interesting phenomenon. And I mean, I'm not a huge Reddit person myself, but I followed this pretty closely. And in the article that Josue will link to in the show notes is fantastic. It's called When Pixels Collide. And it has this giant GIF front and center that shows the transformation of the R space, I'm sorry, R place over, I think it was 72 hours or a couple days or so. And it's just really like as a feat of human ingenuity, it's incredible. And there's just so much to it. And I think one of the most important things that was mentioned in this article was that at the end of the day, when this subreddit was shut down and no one could add any more pixels to it, there was not a single speck of hate or vitriol or, you know, isms of any kind that were on the final page, which, as we all know, I have a pretty dark view of the internet's humanity. So that was actually really cool to read that there's no swastikas, there's no hate speech, there's just an amazing amount of spontaneous art.
And the article, right, When Pixels Collide, I wouldn't call it an article. I think it's a story that he tells, right? How this progressed over 72 hours. And it's a very interesting story because of the way that the internet works. This was only available for 72 hours, so I unfortunately learned about it when it was already done. So I missed out completely. But I can go back and read this story, and he has many, many links in this article. And the way that a story is told on the internet, there's no way – it is really a web, because there was one subreddit where this was placed, right, by the creators of Reddit. Again, why April Fool's? I don't know. April Fool's is a cool day to do just out-of-the-box things, right? Like just crazy experiments now. It's not just pranks. And so they put this out there. And the way that it develops is that people start creating other subreddits. So there are simultaneously many, many stories happening all at the same time, all converging on this gigantic canvas. It starts completely white, and then all you can do is put one little square on there. And the things that started happening were kind of amazing. When you see the gif of the whole thing, right, happening over time, and some of the battles that he even talks about in the story, you see one that I thought was really interesting was the German flag. And then it starts growing, right? So it starts extending the three colored bars. And then at the same time, a flag of France is being created. But you can see that the German flag is extending all the way over. And then there starts this battle where the German flag is overriding the French flag. And then the French flag is still like trying to fight back. So remember, these are people putting one pixel at a time, but organized groups. And then eventually the French flag kind of gave up. And you can see that it starts sprouting from the top of the German flag, kind of letting the German flag continue to extend out to the right. And how do you coordinate something like that? I think that's the story. That's the incredible story. Because not everybody – you can't assume that every single person who was building that German flag was a German citizen or a German resident, right? Factions started forming. People started doing things. And – it's so large that so many smaller things started happening. I don't know. It's such a cool story.
Yeah. I mean, when I was reading through the piece, I felt like I wanted Morgan Freeman to narrate it. Like it has like that much weight and gravitas in the way he talks about what happened, which is so refreshing, because oftentimes things that happen on the internet are devalued or made to seem childish or silly. And again, I mean, this didn't solve world hunger. This isn't, you know, something that will revolutionize humanity in any way, but it is this fascinating look into how human beings organize and create and destroy. And it's just, it's amazing. So there's one thing that always strikes me is that there's the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
He pointed out that the very first thing drawn on our place was Dick Butt. So we went from Dick Butt to the Mona Lisa.
Even that's something that's interesting, right? So it starts people are like, let's draw Dick Butt, which is like this bird with stuff. And then it evolves into Dick Butterfly, right?
Yes.
And so the words are written out in pixels also. And then the word changed, and then it started changing. And you know, he splits up the story in kind of three phases, as in three different groups that were essential to the process, right? Not necessarily, well, I guess, yes, the final product too, but he talks about the creators, the people who wanted to create things like Dick Butt and like Charmander and different drawings, and then how this group that he calls the Protectors came up, and they started organizing and creating more structure, right? And then that got to the point where it was a problem. And then he has a group called the Destroyers, which the way he says it, it comes from, you know, a group of people from 4chan, our friends at 4chan, come in and they create the Void, which just starts destroying everything. And it's almost, it's funny because the article, it has hyperbole, it has sarcasm, but there's still something poetic about the way he talks about these 3 days and everything that happened. And something like this Void, which at the center, people just started putting black pixels and spreading them out over the canvas and kind of destroying everything after the Protectors had kind of had everybody agree to not destroy each other's art and respect it. And now they're destroying everything. And then what came from that, right? Like by tearing things down, they were able to build things better afterwards. It's so cool. And you have to see these GIFs. Like, I'm going to post as many different examples and ways to view this as possible, because it is really impressive.
I think it's really fascinating allegory, too, for I can imagine that if you were involved in this during the 72 hours going pixel by pixel, that this was incredibly, like, emotionally draining, watching, you know, the German flag overrun the French flag, or watching the void, you know, form and then get transformed into the Pink Floyd, you know, Dark Side of the Moon logo, and then back into, like, the Mona Lisa or whatever. And that it would, if you were in it, it was probably really, it could be really intense. But now on the outside and being able to take the wider scope of it, what a different experience that is. Like, I get to sit back and marvel at this as, like, human achievement, human accomplishment, you know, just the sheer amount of work and coordination that went into creating this experience. It blows my mind.
Well, and the coordination is there to a point, right? Because if you come in and you randomly, like, how many people only went in and put one pixel, and how many people saw that a drawing was being made, or saw that, right, some organizer made instructions and then they wanted to draw, or you're drawing here and you're with this group and then you saw that they're making the Mona Lisa over here, and you're like, well, I want to jump to the Mona Lisa. And those things were happening spontaneously. They were happening, you know, people are jumping back and forth while other people are really, really dedicated, while other people are, you know, always going to want to see the world burn and are probably messing with people's drawings all over the place. And just to see these subreddits where people were saying, like, don't touch this, leave this one alone, build around it. And and this community was forming. Again, one of the points that I like that he makes is not only were they communities forming on Reddit, but obviously outside of Reddit also. How many Slack channels and Discord channels were created to discuss how to proceed? How many people mapped out the pixels so that there would be a model to follow? How many people were, you know, creating plans as, like, start from left to right and, you know, this and this. Like, there's this mixture of coordination but also chaos that is the only way that you can possibly come up with this thing. Like, I keep staring at it, and I've stared at it for days now, and it's still incredible. And if you zoom in, there's so much detail.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've been watching it on loop almost the entire time we've been doing the podcast. And I swear, every time it resets, I find something new. Like, I just noticed that there's a David Bowie face. I hadn't seen that before. I mean, there's obvious things.
Where?
The David Bowie face is near the end of the cycle, and it's below the Mona Lisa, right next to the Pink Floyd prism.
Oh, yes. Yep. Yeah, I had seen it earlier.
You know,
right.
Yeah, I
love the taskbar, by the way.
Yes.
There's a Windows 95 taskbar that starts forming along the bottom. It's just incredible. Yeah, also, like, in the story, you can see the story of the colors. Like, you see blue growing, and then red started growing in another color, and then green started growing in the middle. And those were factions, you know, that were forming. And people just kept like, yeah, let's grow. But then once you started bumping up against other, like, actual other things that people had made, it's like, well, what do we do? Are we going to wipe everything out? Are we going to keep growing? Are we going to allow other people to also create? Because there's a lot of space. And also, this was a limited space, so people were always fighting over just this. There was no way to continue to grow.
I feel like I'm not poetic enough to do this, but I definitely feel that this experiment is kind of a microcosm for humanity, that we all start out, ancient humans started out as disparate factions, and then as we come into contact with one another, there become turf wars, and we decide what's worth preserving and what's, you know, what gets destroyed, and, you know, what's important to us. And again, if I was better with words, I'm sure I could say something like really profound, but it's just, there's something so human about this generation of content. The fact that it's not logical, in the fact that it's like, if you watch it, it looks like controlled chaos. And knowing, like, all the human emotion that went into this, you know, the blue corner striving for world domination, and then the void coming in basically claiming that it needs to destroy everything because that's what they do. And just, I mean, even small things like the Achievement Hunter logo, you know, that's a relatively small, not very well-known thing, you know, in the grand scheme of things. And yet there was a community dedicated enough to create that logo. And, you know, there's a Skyrim logo, and the flags are just super fascinating about, you know, how, I guess, proud and people are that if they only have one pixel to put every 5 minutes and they're putting it, you know, on their flag, or, you know, for a patriotic feel, or, I mean, but again, like the Mona Lisa and the Van Gogh, the Starry Night, like there's such a cross section of humanity from Dick Butt to Starry Night. It just, it's amazing. And so, yeah, I can't recommend this story, article, whatever, highly enough. It is, I think you could even say it's a kind of a peek into the microcosm of the human mind.
Yeah, and this is, again, only 72 hours. If it were still active today, that was over 2 weeks ago. If it were still active today, it would look very, very different.
And I don't think it would be as good. Like the idea that it was limited, that gives some kind of urgency to what you're doing, some kind of sense of purpose to make sure that, you know, when it ends, your contribution is, quote unquote, immortalized, so to speak, that whatever you put out there, you know, the original, the Charmander and the Squirtle and the Pikachu that were one of some of the first ones up there, you know, they made it all the way through, and they're in this final iteration of the canvas.
Yeah. A lot of this is cyclical too, right? So those cycles that we see that played out over the course of 3 days would have likely played out again and again and again, and different factions would have formed. And like, the one thing, a few takeaways from this, again, like comparing it to real world events and just the way that we function, you know, where everybody's fighting over territory, and it isn't until the lines are like everybody has their own little space that everybody is sort of able to grow and make the art that they wanted to make. But there's still things like the Mona Lisa's there, but someone put something on top of it, you know? There's a few things that still end up on top of it. So it's like, you can have your Mona Lisa, but guess what? We're still putting something on here.
And yeah, I think it's the Swedish flag.
Yeah, and there's like a marijuana leaf right on top. And
oh, yep.
Yeah, see?
Oh, that's a pineapple. It was a marijuana leaf that got turned into a pineapple.
Oh, see? See?
I love it.
And then there's like, And the Mona Lisa is right next to an upside down Skeletor and He-Man, right? So it's one of those things where like it would have kept changing, it would have kept growing. And the one thing that I think would not have happened, which would be like I don't think it would have ever been just one thing, you know?
Oh no, because
I think about something like Twitch Plays Pokemon, for example, right? This is very reminiscent of that to me, which was a video game that someone set it up so that anybody on the internet could play the game. And at first, the character was just going around in circles and people were going into the menu. And eventually, the community organized in a way to beat the game, right? So everybody was playing toward the same goal. And here, I feel like the closest thing we got to a similar goal is that everybody, you know, we wanted to give people, many, many different people, a chance to make something. And that's what we have here. It's so cool. I can't stop looking at it.
I mean, a game has an objective goal. Like in Pokemon, there are objective goals to create, to win. You can win Pokemon. Whereas our place, you know, it was just given as a blank canvas. There's no inherent goal except for the ones that the people who are involved in it decide. Like the goal is to have your piece there when it ends. Your goal is to have the largest piece. Your goal is to use the most colors or to get the most people. Like I don't think there's an inherent rule structure, but if there was, like, hey, let's see how fast we can recreate the great works using one pixel at a time, I think we'd see something a little bit different. You would definitely still have people trying to draw like dick butts and the void coming in to destroy things, but I think you would have people working more coordinated in that way if they have a set goal, as opposed to this where there's like thousands of mini goals instead of one large overarching goal.
And even if there was one goal at one point, that would change once it was done. So yeah. I can imagine this going over time. Everybody decides we're going to make one giant dark side of the moon. And then as soon as that's done, it would immediately turn into something else. Like, no one's just going to leave it there because, in essence, this is – it's always evolving. It's always changing. People are always doing something. So it has to change.
Reminds me a lot of the I think they're Tibetan monks that do the sand drawings. They'll make these enormous sand artworks that take days and weeks to lay out. And then once they're done, they just – brush it away, you know, the idea that nothing is permanent and it doesn't, you can put work into it and that's what's important because, but at the end of the day, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's existential. And I think he refers to that in the article too. He referred to the three different subsections as the creators, the protectors, and the destroyers, relating them to, what is it, the Indian, pantheon? Many millennia before a place, when humanity itself was still in its infancy, Hindu philosophers theorized that the heavens were made of three competing but necessary deities they called the Trimurti. I'm sorry, I probably just slaughtered that. There were Brahma the creator, Vishnu the protector, and Shiva the destroyer. So yeah, I mean, cool. Like, let's just throw back to, you know, ancient, religious philosophy to reflect how current people are creating and organizing and then destroying.
There's a huge political discussion that could happen here too, and maybe even a religious discussion. And I think a lot of philosophical discussions that could come from this, and some of them that are kind of going on in my mind. But this is we are out of time, so we can't.
Oh, well.
We can't go down that rabbit hole.
No, I'll have to be another episode.
Yeah, I don't know about this show.
maybe a different one.
Philosophy Tech.
I don't think you want me on that one.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
All right.
Well, thank you all for joining us here on Psych Tech. Check us out on Twitter at Psych Tech Cast. I'll be tweeting out the fantastic art I did in AutoDraw for you to enjoy, and you can see how my Josue picture was turned into an owl. And you can find Josue and myself on Twitter as well. He's at Josue A. Cardona, and I'm at Kelly N. Dunlap. And of course, you can find us on the Mothership, which is psychtechpodcast.com. You can get all of our episodes there, as well as links and information about all the other podcasts that are in the Geek Therapy Network. So thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.